There'll be bluebird over the white cliffs of Dover tomorrow. Just you wait and see. There'll be love and laughter and peace ever after tomorrow when the world is free.
Kings for a Penny Drink by Derek Gere, with Sean Phillips as Granny, Gregory Pitt as Bobby, Ishan Baba as Elaine, and John Hollis as Elaine as an older man. The action takes place in Dover during the last war. Kings for a Penny Drink.
Two small boys, one 10, the other younger, up in Granny's attic, feet to head in a single bed, playing tug-of-war with the covers, giggling in the dark. Hushes, subversive. This is Granny's attic, and they mustn't wake her. A bed, a mat, a chair, a chest of drawers on spindly legs, one window in a sloping ceiling. On tiptoes on the chair, they pull themselves up, whispering, feet dangling, and look out across the roofs to see Dover Castle, bathed in a hazy moonlight, hanging in the air. And the shape of the harbour, cool and clear, though there is fog far out in the channel. They hear the last drinkers, late leavers from the Prince Albert. The piano stops suddenly, as though switched off. And doors bang, men call out in the street, and some women. Footsteps are heard. And then it's still and quiet. Apart from the foghorns in the channel, and the giggling in Granny's attic. Still dark, and Granny up early, building the fire, and then a pot of tea and breakfast for her lovely boys off to work. The colliery bus will be at the end of the street at 5 o'clock, and it won't wait, not even for the lovely boys. There is early morning bustle in the small back room with a black grate and the kettle on the fire. Big men move sparingly through an accustomed routine. Preparations for the pit, and a long day. The little gigglers creep downstairs in their pyjamas and sit close together on the black horsehair sofa, which scratches the backs of their legs, swinging their bare feet and watching. And now the house is empty of adults, save for Granny. Red hands, strong-armed and stocky, standing before the dark wood mirror over the fire in the black grate, in her wrap-over pinafore with yellow flowers and shiny black shoes. Two small boys gaze upwards, brows furrowed in concentration, as they watch while Granny pulls her long, strong white hair straight back into a bun behind her head and keeps it there by a miracle, which involves something she takes from her mouth and having her elbows in the air. But best of all, even better than this, is when she puts on her black hat to go shopping. And she sticks the long silver needle into the hat through her head until it comes out the other side.
Crikey!
And Granny hums a lot and talks about Wales and the valleys and the old pits and Grandad left behind under Grant.
Oh, or Henriette.
And then she hums again and purses her lips and wrinkles her nose and puts her red hands into the huge pocket of her pinafore to bring out two sticky sweets for her two little lovely boys, who are cousins. Uncle Ted and Doug and John back home on the colliery bus, and Jack back on leave from his ship, and Keith, who is at Dunkirk, wink and tell them, this time things will be different.
Just you wait, little uns. This time, things will change.
But the little uns know better, and nothing should change. The hours will be filled with cliffs and caves, chalk pits and dogs, bomb buildings, worms, penny drinks and nettles, mud and ropes, pebbles and giggles. Just like last year, and this year, and next year, and forever.
Vroom, vrr, vrr, vrr.
What are you doing, Mum?
Playing.
Making noises. You don't want to do that. That's silly. Do you want to come with me?
Where are you taking him, Bobby Collins?
Down the shop, Gran.
Well, mind you come straight back now. Do you hear me? 5 minutes.
Yes, Gran.
Out of the back gate and heading down the alley for the open road, we passed the bomb site at the end of the street.
Oh, Penny, what you got?
Nothing. Honest. Don't matter.
Mrs. King, aproned and impressive, emerged from behind a framework of stacked boxes and hanging buckets.
Well, Bobby Collins, how much you got?
A penny.
1 penny drink, then, is it?
Two.
Two? You've only got a penny.
Mum said she'd pay for the other one on the way home.
Hmm. Here you are, then.
Do you like it, then? Bet you never tasted Bing before.
It's all right.
Bing. Made my eyes water. Outside, eyes still smarting, we met the girls.
Why is he crying?
He's not. It's the Bing.
He's crying.
We're going to railway. You coming?
It's dangerous.
It's great.
My mum says it's silly playing there.
Well, we're going.
He's still crying.
Shut up. You're daft.
He's crying. He's too little.
I'm not. I'm going.
Well, come. But you must promise.
What?
To show me yours if I show you mine.
Don't be soppy. I don't want to see yours, I told you.
Then we're not coming.
Good. Come on, Elaine.
Oh, please, Bobby. I will show you mine.
We could just see one of the big green engine if we go now.
I hate you, Bobby Collins.
I had watched trains before, but never like this. Hanging over a sooty black bridge, feet off the ground and shoes scraping the wall, watching them emerge belching smoke and noise from a tunnel. The huge, green, black engines passed directly underneath and left us in a cloud of grey steam which swirled over the wall and dropped onto the road, where it scattered and evaporated almost as quickly as it had arrived. There was an age of noise, and the ground shook. When it was gone, the roaring stayed in my ears, the bits in my eyes, and then drops, like light rain, settled on my face and hands.
Where have you been? Where did you take him?
Nowhere, Gran.
Cardiot, oh, you little love. What has he done to you? Are you all right? Have I lost you?
I was grabbed and gathered up into the folds of her pinafore, gasping for air, eyes wide open, and nose pressed hard into an only-to-be-guessed-at area. She swung round on Bobby, taking me with her.
How could you? How dare you? You wait till I tell your mum.
But, Gran.
Don't you gran me. Get out of my sight.
But, Gran.
Out. Out! Now, lovely, you shall have a nice drink of milk and jam tarts, and you shall soon feel better. You wait there.
Yes, Gran.
Standing on tiptoe on the tin bath in the backyard, Bobby was just able to see into the room. He grinned at me through lace and glass, and ducked down again as Granny returned. I slid a jam tart inside my sock. Saturday was a day of comings and goings. At night, my mother and father went dancing or to the pictures. Left alone, Gran would invariably find me something to do, like shelling peas for Sunday lunch or sorting out the dirty clothes for the Monday wash. All tasks finished, she would sink slowly down on the horsehair sofa and ask me to turn out the lights, and then switch on the wireless. And together we would listen to all kinds of music and plays. A world of sounds would fill our imaginations, except within a few minutes Gran was often asleep, although she could tell you exactly what had happened in some very complicated play.
Perfectly obvious. The inspector did it.
About 9 o'clock, I would try, unsuccessfully, to curl myself into an invisible ball.
Bedtime for you, young man. You need all your sleep to make the hairs grow on your chest.
Despite hours of four surgeons in bed, none of us found a single hair on any of our chests, whilst my dad and Mr. Herbert next door,
who never spends a waking night in his own house,
were covered in hair. I would fall asleep dreaming of giant hairs sprouting all over my chest and covering me from head to foot. And then suddenly, it would be Sunday, and roast beef, Sunday school, and at least one visit to church. And then the week would start all over again.
Mother dear, I'm riding you from somewhere in France, hoping this finds you well. Sergeant says I'm doing fine, a soldier and a heart. Here's the song that we all sing, it'll make you laugh. We're gonna hang out the washing on the Siegfried line. Have you any dirty washing, mother dear? We're gonna hang out the washing on the Siegfried line, 'cause the washing day is here.
Monday, wash day. Mrs. Herbert lived next door to Gran. Mrs. Herbert was famous for being the mother of Bertie Herbert, who got nosebleeds. Mrs. Herbert was very big.
How's it going, Mrs. D?
Nice wind, Mrs. Herbert. Good drying weather.
Another half hour and I can bring all these sheets in. Kettle's on.
Ooh, thank you, Mrs. Herbert. I'll be round presently. Boys, I'll be 10 minutes. Would you like to put these small bits through for me? Use a chair to stand on.
Sock and pants, woolens and shirts, tucked the edge gingerly between the lips of the huge white rollers and heaved for all I was worth on the handle, watching each article disappear, ballooning slightly at the end, the water gushing out and running down the grey metal tray into the bucket on the floor. Engrossed until...
You little devil! Wait till I get your hands on you!
I turned quickly. Something was wrong. First, Mrs. Herbert's purple face over the garden wall. Then the muddy marks on Mrs. Herbert's crisp, cracking sheets. I couldn't see Bobby. I panicked. Head down, I ran in the back door, sped through the house, out onto the pavement, and without looking, leapt 3 feet into the road.
Oh, my God!
Oh,
you're up
there. There, my little lovely, don't you cry. Granny's coming. We'll soon have you right as ninepence. Oh, nasty woman on a nasty bike.
I beg your pardon.
Well, serve you right. Cycling down our street.
Soon I was in the rocking chair by the fire, wounds bathed and bandaged, toffee in mouth within minutes. I never heard any more about Miss Herbert's washing, never did find out what happened to the cyclist. But Bobby had an idea.
No, definitely not Bobby Collins.
But Brenda...
I paid a lot of money for that bike. I worked hard for it and you are not to touch it, do you hear?
But Brenda...
My cousin Brenda was Bobby's older sister.
Leave it alone. Bikes don't grow on trees, you know.
But they do get left in the shed when their owner goes off to Folkestone on the bus for the afternoon with a Lance Corporal of the Black Watch.
Shut the door, otherwise my mum might see it's gone.
All right.
It was a lovely bike. Shiny black with a leather saddle. Not that we got to sit on the saddle. With arms raised above shoulder height, we gripped the handlebars, straddled the chain with our legs, shuffled forward in an attempt to gain momentum. Once this had been achieved, the next objective was to stand on the pedals and wobble along for a few yards until the machine took on a list to left or right, and then we had to jump before the bike hit the ground.
Ouch!
After a while, we were able to travel the length of the alleyways, preventing ourselves from going out into the road by steering into one of the concrete bollards across the alley entrance. But...
I'm going round it this time and come back.
His approach was all right, but at the vital moment he lost control, wobbled between the bollards and out onto the street. The road sloped steeply to the right, and this was the direction the bike took. I dashed to the end of the alleyway just in time to see Bobby, legs on pedals and head just able to see over the handlebars, gathering speed towards the bottom of the street before he swung out of sight past King's shop. Over the railway bridge, past the chip shop, to the bend at the bottom where the road turned sharply to avoid the chalk pit.
Oh, my God.
It was as she was leaving the chip shop that Brenda's bike flashed past her, being ridden, she said later, by a huge pair of eyes. Ah! Bobby was saved from any lasting damage by the gorse bushes growing at the base of the chalk pit. He looked a mess, but Uncle Ted said it was only surface damage. The bicycle was...
a write-off.
But, Gran, he shouldn't have been riding it in the first place.
Well, I don't care. It was irresponsible of you, Brenda, to leave it in the shed like that.
Oh,
should have locked it up.
Oh, Gran.
Poor little Bobby, he might have been killed.
Chance would be a fine thing.
Brenda, that's not very nice.
Oh, Gran.
Good old Gran.
One potato, two potato, three potato, four... five potato, six potato, seven potato more.
There was Billy Wingnut, whose real name was Eric. But as Bobby said, whoever heard of a cowboy called Eric? Billy was a bit dull and had ears that stuck out at right angles from his head. He was easily led, and Uncle Ted said Billy was our cannon fodder, whatever that meant. We had found a new cave high on the cliffs below the castle.
There used to be Gunny.
How do you know?
Me dad told me.
Don't leave you.
Don't care. Who's going first?
Not me again. I've got me new plimsolls on.
But Billy was urged, cajoled, and finally bullied.
All right, I'll go. It's ever so dark in here. It's all wet. I'm coming back.
Don't you dare.
Not yet. No, go right to the inn.
You come.
I don't want to.
We'll love you if you don't scare any cow.
Yeah, we'll love you.
Soldiers used to dig levers here for weaning at the end of the cave, you know. In case they got taken short on duty. My dad told me.
Oh, yeah?
You rotters. What would my mum say?
All aboard, please. Town Hall, Isolation Hospital and Grammar School. Plenty of room on top. Both sides, please. Move along. Oh, flipping neck. What is that?
I'm with them.
I don't care who you're with. I'm not letting you on my bus like that.
But it's not fair. I even gave that lot of money to the bus. What shall I do?
Start walking if I were you, son. Any more fares? Hold very tight, please.
But it's not fair.
Cannon fodder. And then there was Peter.
Poor Peter. There's a love. Talk about starting out under a handicap.
Peter had a glass eye and a limp. One of Bobby's best tricks was to borrow Peter's glass eye and stick it to his forehead with chewing gum. Then he would walk around showing himself to any soppy girls he could find. The results were often spectacular.
Robert Collins! Now give Pete back his eye yet once. Do you hear me?
One potato, two potato, three potato, four, five potato, six potato, seven potato more.
And there was Herbert Herbert, Bertie, famous for nosebleeds. Son of Mrs. Herbert, who was big, very big. Bertie, round and soft, wearing glasses which were held together by yards of grub sticking tape. But appearances can be deceptive, for Bertie had a grossly over-optimistic view of his own physical prowess. This particular jungle tree was halfway up the steep bank of a chalk pit.
I don't know. It's ever so steep. I didn't realise it was that steep.
Bertie, eager as a...
I'll do it!
It says something for the enormity of the drop that we hadn't simply stuck Billy on the end of the rope and given him a shove.
Please, let me. I don't mind.
Bertie grabbed the rope from Bobby's hand and launched himself into space. We watched with interest as the rope straightened and pulled against the branch. And Bertie swung towards the tree in what seemed like slow motion. Unfortunately, the rope didn't swing past the tree, but started to wrap round it. Once, twice, On the second time round, we glimpsed the look of horror on Bertie's face as he sensed what fate held in store for him. We scrambled down the bank to where the body lay. Bertie's nose was bleeding more profusely than we'd ever seen before, and his glasses were round the back of his neck. The frames buckled and bent.
You all right?
No.
That's good. Right, we'll shift the knot along the branch in a minute, then you can have another go.
Bertie's glasses needed miles of sticking tape to piece them together, and Mrs. Herbert was so cross, she slapped his face and made his nose bleed all over again. And Robin Kerslake.
He's not here. He just went.
Firemen came in two fire engines and drained the muddy pools in the field near the railway line. There was a police car and ambulance as well. Bobby and I sat together on the wall and watched as men in uniform gathered round a small bundle on a stretcher before it was put in the ambulance and driven away.
When the lights go on again, the boys are home again, all over the world. And rain or snow is all that may fall from the skies above. A kiss won't mean goodbye, but hello to love.
Mum?
Hmm?
Can I have threepence?
Threepence? Why do you want that much?
I want to go down King's for a penny drink.
Well, you won't want threepence then, will you?
One for Bobby as well.
That's still only twopence. So what do you want the other penny for?
I don't know.
Well, in that case, I'll look and see if I can spare twopence. There you are. One, two. But that's all for this week, mind.
I done it. Ask for more than you need, Bobby said, and sometimes you end up with what you want. His dad, my Uncle Brian, told him that. So next time he wanted money, Bobby asked for half a crown, and Uncle Brian clumped him for being cheeky. I had twopence, a penny drink which we would share, and a penny left for a box of matches. If the bomb buildings and the castle, the cliffs and caves were our favourite places, then our favourite toy was a box of matches.
Wow!
We'd make fires out of rubbish on bomb sites, out of mattresses and old chairs thrown to the bottom of chalk pits, from seaweed and driftwood at the foot of Shakespeare Cliff. If we could get apples, we cooked them, and then allowed Bobby's dog Rex to lick off the black bits round the outside before we tackled the soft, warm, yellow insides. We were always very careful, but sometimes things did get out of hand.
Bobby, what have you done to your eyebrows? They're all singed, what's left of them.
Once we even found a fire on the hills that was nothing to do with us.
Go on, don't gnaw, gnaw, gnaw.
Nine.
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 And share fire. Hello? Fire!
Well done, lads. It's a good job you were around to give us a ring. Could have been a nasty one, this. Now then, where do you live?
We're cousins. He's from the same house.
Yes.
I've half a mind to pop round to let your parents know they've got lads they can be proud of.
We blushed with pleasure, our chests swelling with pride.
But where do you want a halfpenny, lovely? You can't do much with a halfpenny these days. Here, look. I'll see if I can spare a penny.
I'd rather have a halfpenny, Gran.
All right, Bach, you know best. Now, there you are. Two halfpennies. Go on, now.
Yes, Gran.
And be a good boy.
Yes, Gran.
We lost a lot of halfpennies. When we did find one, 30 yards up the line, flung into the long grass, it was still roundish and flat, but it was considerably bigger than the penny we'd hoped for, and both sides were worn as smooth as one of Granny's Welsh pancakes. Bertie Herbert was not enthusiastic.
I suppose you realise you can be arrested.
What for?
Why? Defacing the coins of the realm and insulting His Majesty by flattening his face.
In spite of threats to break his glasses, Bertie went off to tell his mum about us, and I lay awake for 2 nights, waiting for the knock on the door.
10 green bottles hanging on the wall. 10 green bottles hanging on the wall. And if 1 green bottle should accidentally fall, there'll be 9 green bottles hanging on the wall.
Bottles were cash. Pulled out of the nettles and hastily cleaned of soil and spiders by wiping on a trouser leg. Some only fetched a halfpenny, but a Bing or Tizer bottle, complete with sewing rubber bung and metal clasp, fetched a penny at King's shop.
I don't know where you found that revolting thing, Bobby Collins, but it's not one of mine. You'll have to take it somewhere else.
Tis?
It definitely is not.
Oh, Beg.
How did she always know? But mostly they were from King's shop.
I don't know where you got those, Bobby Collins, but they're not mine. You'll have to take them somewhere else.
Now, this was a bit of a shock. We knew they were Mrs. King's, because we'd just taken them from a crate in her backyard. Beer bottles required a different technique. This involved being outside the Prince Albert at opening time, to accost the first customer to step in across the threshold.
Uncle Ted, can you get the money back on this for us?
So give me me shovel and me pick. Nelly, I'm going down the hole to get the coal. With me shovel and me pick, me lamp and little bit of wick, I'm going down the old coal hole.
Granny's coal allowance from the pick was delivered Thursday. It was shoveled off a lorry in the back alley, a pile of black rocks, and they'd been all helped to get it into the cellar under the house. The men would push a wheelbarrow. Bobby and I carried individual lumps under our arms and sent them spinning down the metal chute to crash on the pile in the dark below.
Oh, look at you two now. Black as soot. What am I saying? It is soot.
And we laughed every time.
Over there, by the sink in the scullery, we'll get some of this muck off you. Then you shall have a penny each for being such big boys and working so hard.
And every Thursday, as she cleaned us up, Granny would tell us that Uncle Jack was the sensible one.
Now, your Uncle Jack, he's a sensible one. He got out of the mines and he's Royal Navy now. Batships.
She always stressed the Royal. And as always, I went to look at the photograph which had pride of place on top of the small pedal organ in the front room.
And your cousin Tom, he's too smart to get stuck in the pits. Your cousin Tom is on the ferries.
The ferries. Now that was glamorous work.
Uncle Jack? Uncle Jack? Tom's working on the ferries.
I know. At least he had the sense not to go down the pit.
Uncle Jack?
What
does Tom do on the ferries?
Expect he's starting out like the rest of them. First-class spew boy.
Gran, what's a spew boy?
Now, don't you two go asking silly questions.
Why first-class then?
I expect it means he's very good at it.
Later, we learned what Tom's work involved.
As a steward? Stuart, I don't feel very well.
Oh, dear, madam.
In fact, I'm going to...
Oh, dear, madam. Spew boy to the first-class passenger lounge.
A first-class spew boy. Plus ça change, plus c'est la même chose. Saturday mornings were different. Saturday mornings we were guaranteed sixpence. Saturday morning pictures. Threepence to get in downstairs and threepence to spend. The doors opened at 9:30, but the queue started forming around 8:00. Those in first would get the best seats on the front row, heads staring up at the towering screen where all the action and every scratch and blemish on film could be seen to gigantic effect. First, the cartoon. If we were lucky, it would be Donald Duck or Tom and Jerry. If luck was out, Felix the Cat or Betty Boop. And then?
Flash Gordon, episode 36, The Revenge of Ming.
Each week, a 10-minute action-packed package repeat of the previous week, part of a larger canvas whose origins we'd long ago forgotten, and always ending with Flash facing certain death at the hands of crazed hordes in swimming caps and army capes driving spaceships which looked like Granny's kettle flying backwards, belching smoke from its spout. We gasped, but then relaxed, secure in the knowledge our hero would be back next Saturday morning as certainly as we would. And how he was going to get out of it this time, providing us with a talking point for a whole week. But nobody ever got it right. The interval, and a chance to spend some of the change burning holes in our pockets.
I'm not sure what I'm...
Come on, love, make up your mind. You're holding up the light. Look, it's easy. It's either a red one or an orange one, and only one each.
The lights would go down for the big film, with half the audience still wanting their lollies. Oh, joy. A cowboy film. You always knew where you were in a cowboy film. The baddies had one gun and needed a shave. The goodies wore two guns and clean clothes. We cheered, we booed and stamped our feet. And during the sobby bits, we lost all interest and talked among ourselves or looked for lolly sticks and cigarette cards under the seats. And then suddenly, it was all over. And we were back outside, blinking in the daylight. But we'd had our money's worth, and still had change to spend at King's Corner Shop on the meander home. Also, we knew that next Saturday, it would all be repeated, and that it would always be there. Forever.
The other night, dear, as I lay dreaming, I dreamt that you were by my side. Came disillusion when I awoke, dear. You were gone.
You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away.
It's time.
He's too young, far too young.
You like it like that, don't you, lovely?
He's beginning to look like a flipping girl.
I needed a haircut.
First time, eh, Sonny Jim? Right. Up you get, then.
You are my sunshine. My only sunshine.
There. Wasn't too bad, was it? Anything on it, young sir?
Please, Daddy.
Oh, go on, then. A little dab of Brill Cream. First time.
How could you? He didn't need to have it like that, not the first time.
It's only a short back and sides.
Love, poor little love.
His ears are sticking out.
Everybody's ears stick out.
Why didn't you go the whole hog and invite the man to shave it all off?
And now you're being unreasonable.
Unreasonable? You call what you did today reasonable?
And so it was, all the way home. No one thought to ask what I felt.
You asleep? Sometimes people can be very difficult to please. No matter how hard you try, you end up upsetting someone. Anyway, no need for you to worry about it. And your Uncle Ted says the only difference between a good haircut and a bad one is about 10 days. Here.
He hurriedly pressed two coins in my hand, then slipped out of the room. I slid out of bed and went to the window, where I could see the coins in the light from the street.
2 half-crowns!
What's up?
Look, one each.
No.
Why?
Don't want it. Go back to sleep.
I like coffee, I like tea. I'd like Bobby in with me. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6... I like coffee.
Sometimes we played the girls' games, especially in the evening in the street outside Granny's house. We played girls' games because we'd had our supper and were allowed out for half an hour before bedtime with the warning,
"Don't go too far away, mind."
Girls' games seem better adapted to being in one place. while we would travel miles to find the perfect spot. A little dip in the hills, a mound of oily pebbles piled up against the harbour wall, a disused air raid shelter. Girls' games could be played in the street. And they were better at them than we were.
Was that you again, Bobby Collins?
It wasn't us, Mrs. Herbert. It was Bobby Collins.
You did that deliberate, Bobby Collins.
I didn't.
You always spoil it. You're not playing anymore.
You're soppy.
Hurt, we would sit on the wall, swinging our legs, pretending disinterest, but hoping they would eventually relent. And sometimes they did.
I'm telling your mum on you this time, Bobby Collins.
On very rare occasions, we let the girls play our games. But away from the civilising influence of the street, they were forever lifting up their dresses.
I'll show you mine if you show me yours.
They've got tanks up in the barracks. Come on!
Lay in the long grass, peering down on the parade ground. The soldiers, our enemy, had left, and the vast concrete plain was deserted.
Gone for a cup of tea, I expect.
Glass of water, more like. Our Uncle Jack in the Navy say soldiers should only be allowed to drink water because anything stronger makes them piddly.
Tiddly.
Tiddly.
On one side of the parade ground stood a long, high brick shed, with several wide doors left open. Just inside the doors we could see rows of armoured cars. All morning we'd watched soldiers in overalls painting these, covering the familiar brown and green with dull yellow.
What are they doing that for?
My guess is they're off to Palestine next week.
Palestine?
Where's that?
You mean you don't know?
Neither do you.
Do?
Where then?
Not telling.
And you don't know why they're being painted yellow?
Because people in Palestine probably don't like brown and green tanks. Probably like yellow ones.
Yeah.
We sneaked down the hill and sped across the hot concrete towards the sheds. Peeking round the doors, we could see there was no one about. Brushes and open tins of paint stood on benches where they'd been left. I pressed my hand firmly onto the wing of an armoured car. The paint was still sticky, and my hand made a lovely imprint. So I did it again and stood back to consider my work. I moved round the whole car, pleased with the effect I was creating. Meanwhile, Bobby and the others had picked up brushes and were setting to with a will.
What the hell do you want them to do?
The immense figure of a sergeant major was silhouetted in the doorway, legs apart, hands on hips. He advanced.
Well, after a bit of overtime, are we? I'm surprised your union let you work through the lunch break.
Bobby smiled.
We're helping.
Helping? Helping, you little toadbag. You ain't helping, you are mucking it all up. What are you doing? Repeat after me, I am mucking it all up, sir. What are you doing? Well?
Don't know.
You don't know? You are smashing all of His Majesty's vehicles like there was Cairo Kazi, and you don't know what you're doing.
Being particularly sensitive to atmosphere, I could tell things were not going too well, and I slowly began wiping my hands down my trouser leg in an effort to destroy the evidence. As one, we started to edge slowly towards the other open doors, eyes riveted on the sergeant's face.
Stand still! Stand still! Give me your old gang of hooligans! Stand still!
No!
Rabbit, run, run, run. Run, rabbit, run, rabbit, run, run, run. Bang, 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 bang goes the farmer's gun. Run, rabbit, run, rabbit, run, run.
He flew headlong off the open parade ground towards the long grass of the hill. At the top, we dared to stop and look down. The sergeant major, a tiny figure now, was striding towards a group of soldiers, his voice a distant, manic shriek.
Blooming soldiers, I've a good mind to go to the Navy now instead. Serves them right.
Bobby blamed the girls, saying we wouldn't have been spotted if it hadn't been for them. Every day we heard names of places we didn't know. Cairo, Pearl Harbor, El Alamein, and of ships lost at sea. Suddenly, Gran would become distant and remote. She wouldn't notice us creeping down the stairs for the morning ritual of tea and toast. She seemed hardly aware of it at all. My parents would share her sense of silence, and we knew it was something that mattered to them. Bobby was always full of explanations, stating that he'd heard that ladies in a certain condition became difficult. One of the girls living in our street had lost her mother in the London bombing, and she'd come to Dover with her father, a small man with long legs. He was away a good deal, and then one day he simply didn't come back again. Gran said he'd been on minesweepers.
He's been lost at sea, and we must pray hard that he comes home.
But we knew he wouldn't. Bobby told us that Lucy Jennings was now an orphan. It sounded almost unpleasant. Then Bertie informed us that it meant she didn't have any parents. That was what being an orphan was. Bobby declared he was having nothing to do with orphans. And besides, she was still a girl.
I want someone to play with. It isn't fair.
I'd come home early from school, and walking into the house, overheard Lucy and Gran talking about orphans.
They don't understand, lovely. It's only in your heart that you will find your mum and dad. When your mum died, you tried to remember her. And now you must do the same for your brave father.
Why do they hate me being an orphan?
They don't hate you, no. They just feel things have changed. You're not the same to them, but you are exactly the same.
Will you be my grandma too?
Oh, lovely, lovely. You've got grandparents.
I don't want to leave here. They want me to go back to London to stay with them. I want to stay here.
Look, this photograph is of my husband. He died too, oh, years ago, before you were born. But he is always with me, wherever I am. We were on holiday in Barry Island, so happy. And then 2 months later, he was gone. Do you know what happened?
No.
All his friends, all our relations, stopped coming to see me. They felt embarrassed, you see. They didn't know what they'd say to me. After the funeral, they left me alone. I think they expected me to cry and dress in black and go into mourning. But he wouldn't have wanted that. So what did I do?
I don't know.
I opened all the doors and windows, put his photographs round the house and invited everyone to a party. By 6 o'clock, the front room was full of people singing and I was in the kitchen crying.
Why?
Because I was so happy. He was alive again. We were talking about him, remembering. Shall I tell you what we are going to do? We are going to organise the biggest party we can and invite everyone from the street. Will you like that?
Will they come?
Oh, they'll come, especially if you tell them I'm baking one of my special cakes. We'll have to fight to keep them out.
I saw Lucy run from the room, the start of a smile on her face. A few moments later, Gran came into the hall, wiping tears from her eyes with her apron.
Can you keep a secret, Elaine?
I said I could.
Promise.
She knew I might have been listening, and she didn't want me to spoil Lucy's big day. When Bobby was at the party, mouth full of cake, he told Lucy he wanted to be an orphan as well.
I do like to be beside the seaside. I do like to be beside the sea. Oh, I do like to stroll along the prom, where the brass band plays tiddly-om.
There we are, lovely boys. I think you've got everything. Towels, costumes, sandwiches. All right?
Yes, Gran.
Oh, now don't forget, if you go in the water, watch out for them jellyfish. Mrs. Herbert said there was another notice outside the police station yesterday, so you take care.
Portuguese men of war. Uncle Jack says they've got long purple tails and they can kill ya.
I decided I would play on the pebbles. Bobby emerged from the water, hair streaming, eyes blinking.
Can't see one.
What?
Portuguese man of war. Can't see one. If we catch one and take it to the police station, we might get a reward.
We sat together on the pebbles, eating paste sandwiches, meeting a group of prospective channel swimmers, practising their lazy strokes, going from one harbour wall to the other and back again, black-capped and goggled. It wasn't something either of us had ever considered trying. We'd seen the stuff they had to be covered in, like a lot of undercooked chips, Uncle Ted said. A few yards along the beach, a man staggered from the water and fell to the ground, clutching his leg.
But he's found one. You all right, mister?
The man lay on his back on the pebbles and stared up at us. He took his hand from his leg and we saw a long, red, vicious sting mark running the length of his shin.
Get someone!
It's a Portuguese man of war!
No. I don't care if it's the old German navy, just get someone!
Shall I rub it?
The man's eyes rolled round inside his head.
Just get someone, please!
Who shall I get?
Just get anybody!
Shall I phone the ambulance or the police?
Oh, my God, look! Get somebody, anybody, I don't care who it is, but fetch somebody!
It is a Portuguese man of war!
We tore gingerly up the beach, bare feet on pebbles. The nearest telephone box was in Snargate Street. It was occupied.
Oh, Hurry up, lady, please. This is an emergency.
Get out of here.
Out.
The next box was on the seafront, past the White Cliffs Hotel. It contained a huge petty officer, minesweepers. We left him there and headed inland.
Listen, missus, a man's been stung. Portuguese man of war. Me and my little cousin. On the beach, up by the Prince of Wales Pier. Is there a reward?
He put the phone down quickly and we dashed out of the kiosk, pausing only to press button B, just in case. Finally, back at the beach, the man was nowhere to be seen.
Do you kids call the emergency services? Well, where is he? You don't know? Is this some kind of stupid joke, eh?
Excuse me? Have you come for the victim of a Portuguese man of war?
Told you!
We come for a man. We were told he's been stung.
That's right, he's gone.
Gone? What do you mean, gone?
Gone. He told me to tell you he got fed up with waiting, so he said he'd make his own way to hospital. He's walking. You might catch him up if you hurry.
He didn't even say thank you.
And we had to walk home. The conductor wouldn't allow us on the crowded late afternoon bus with our inner tube. We told him we could deflate it in 5 minutes by pushing a matchstick down into the valve, but he wouldn't lend us a matchstick. And he said he couldn't hold up his bus that long anyway.
Hold very tight, please.
He waved as the bus went round the corner. Bobby replied with a different kind of gesture. Following the Portuguese man of war incident, everyone was worried about snakes.
Oh, dear.
I'd never seen a snake, but apparently the hills were teeming with them.
Ah, yes, Mrs. Herbert says. Mrs. Herbert says they've even set up a special unit at the hospital. Warm weather.
Gnats are poisonous, with instant a horrible death.
Oh, dear.
We were playing soldiers when I got bitten. Crouched down and silent in the long grass on the clifftops overlooking the East Cliff docks, I first heard the slither. Looking down, I saw a foot-long snake carefully making its way between my sandals. I gasped. I jumped up quickly and fell backwards. I felt the sting of the bite into the back of my leg, and I knew I was going to die an instant, horrible death. So I screamed and started crying. Between sobs, I explained.
Cor, you're going to die. It'll be instant and horrible.
I screamed again.
No, you're not. Not if we get to the hospital quick.
Stumbling, half-carried, I was escorted down the hill, through the park, past houses, to the casualty department of Queen Mary's Hospital.
Miss, my little cousin's been bit by a nadder.
Has he now? We'd better have a look, then. Stand up. And where exactly was he bitten?
On the East Cliff.
Whereabouts on his body?
Back of leg.
Turn round.
Ouch!
Well, it's a bit red, but I can't see any bite marks. Are you absolutely sure it was a snake?
Of course it was. A adder. You saw it, didn't you?
And what did it look like, this adder? Well, speak up, boy. I can't hear you.
Silver. About this long.
Did you tread on it? Did you feel it bite? Did it hurt much? Or does it still hurt? Do you feel ill? Ever been stung by nettles before?
Ha, of course he has, millions of times.
Do you know what a slow worm looks like?
That weren't no slow worm, it was a netter.
That was a slow worm, and that is nettle sting. Now get out of here, all of you, and don't you dare let me see you in here wasting my valuable time again.
Hang on a minute, don't you get no ointment? Netters are deadly poisonous.
It most certainly does not. Now go away.
I hastened towards the door, all too well aware of the nurse's cold eyes boring into the back of my neck.
Hold on a minute. Don't go so fast. Limp. It'll make her feel rotten.
Now then, my lovely, what do you want string for?
A bow and arrow.
A bow and arrow, is it? That's nice. Let's see what we've got in here, shall we? There. What about that now? Will it do? I've been using the same ball of string for parcels all through the war. What do you think of that, then? Elaine?
We made the bows from green springy wood, ripped from bushes at the foot of a chalk pit. The arrows were thin canes, which we found stuck in the ground against the garden wall. The birds we hunted for hours on the hills were never in any real danger, as our arrows described graceful arcs through the air, reaching a height of at least 10 feet, before returning gently to earth behind us. But on the way home, Bobby suddenly stopped.
Look! What?
The target lay invitingly on the pavement 20 yards away, licking its paws in the sunshine.
Watch!
Bobby lay on his stomach on the pavement, pulled back the bowstring, and let fly. The cat sensed he had approached a split second before it arrived. It leapt 3 feet into the air, and the arrow passed harmlessly underneath it.
Where? Did you see that?
Cat hunting and cat acrobatics became the new craze. It lasted for several days, and was fortunately brought to a sudden and dramatic end before any lasting damage was inflicted upon a single member of the local feline community.
What's this one, then?
It was a dozing Tom, flat out on the pavement at the end of the street. The arrow was halfway to its mark when the vast bulk of Mrs. Herbert stepped out of her front door on the way to the co-op. Concerned, we began to rush towards her. And then we saw the look on her face.
You little thing, just wait till I get your hand. Oh, my God. Oh, my ankle. Bobby, you come back here.
When we dared return home that evening, Gran was waiting for us, standing with her back to the fire, hands behind her. Uncle Jack was sitting in the armchair, his face hidden by the Daily Herald.
Mrs. Herbert got a nasty cut on her ankle, you know. Might have needed stitches up at the hospital. And you ruined her best pair of stockings. Jack, I shall just say this. You are not my lovely boys at the present. You are my naughty boys. And that's the way you shall stay until I tell you otherwise.
She held out hands. We slowly brought the bows and arrows from behind our backs and gave them to her. She carefully undid the knots, then wound the string into a neat small ball and popped it into the pocket of her pinafore.
That will teach me to lend you my best string. I shall know better in future. Now, up to bed, both of you.
Yes, Gran.
Well, go on, quickly. I don't want to see you again this evening.
Yes, Gran.
So your Uncle Jack will have to bring up your biscuits and milk later. It's going to be a long time till you and I can be friends again.
Yes, Gran.
A long time. But summer days were winter days, only warmer. Winter days we played more indoors. And nothing suggested to us the passing of time on a larger scale. For that would have meant change. And nothing ever changes. Then suddenly one day, Granny and I stood on the front step, hand in hand, and watched as Bobby moved off down the street. A small figure in new grey long trousers and brown sandals, a large leather satchel round his neck. He kept turning to wave at us until he had passed King's shop on the corner and was gone. To big school, a bus ride away. Granny took a handkerchief from her sleeve and blew her nose.
There now. Off he goes. Well, well, well. Let's see. What do we do now? I know. We'll have a nice cup of tea and a biscuit.
At night, Bobby told me everything. But I understood little. As weeks rolled by, tales of cabbage, figs and custard, drinking fountains freezing, and little bottles of milk standing by a Coke boiler in classroom. Tables, which you didn't eat off. And Miss Wilson, who said Bobby's class had to make up for lost time. And Miss Edwards, who kept her hanky in her purple knickers. Once, I passed Bobby's new school. He saw me peering through the railings, waving to him. He didn't come over. I never went there again. Something had happened. Cousins, more than cousins. Feet to head in Granny's single bed in the attic. Happy because things are as they should be. As they were. And will be. Forever.
Forever. And ever. And ever.
There'll be bluebirds over the wide cliffs of Dover tomorrow, just you wait and see. There'll be love and
Sean Phillips played Granny, John Hollis, Elaine as a man, Ishan Baba, Elaine as a boy, and Gregory Pitt, Bobby, in Kings for a Penny Drink. Bertie, Neil Maskell, Billy, Albert Boateng, The Girl, Sean Jenkins, Mrs. King, Tara Dominic, Mrs. Herbert, Jenny Howe, Brenda and the Nurse, Danielle Allen. Uncle Jack and the Barber, Alan Barker, Elaine's Mum, Jane Whittenshaw, Elaine's Dad and Ambulance Man, James Simmons, Sergeant Major, Norman Jones, and the man stung by the Portuguese man of war, Terence Edmund. Kings for a Penny Drink was written by Derek Gere and directed by Martin Jenkins.